Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and Farming and Agonomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
I don't know about you guys, but I was very keenly watching last week as the BBC were live streaming a combine progressing through a field like nothing you've ever seen for Farm 24.
Combine cam. It's cool,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly.
You could watch that all day.
I can't help thinking that as a live stream that hopefully nothing goes wrong and we don't get a mishap and something that shouldn't be combined up does get combined up. But I didn't hear any stories of that happening.
That reminds me of a time when I was in New Zealand and I was basically a bum on a seat in a combine. I'd never driven one before. They taught me well how to do it in about a week. And I was merrily going through a field of, I think it was grass seed actually, doing the grass seed harvest with a draper header on the front. And I combined over a saucepan and it made the combine make some really weird noises that did scare me, to be honest, but we move.
Hello, I'm Tom Spencer.
I'm Hannah Clark.
And I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reese.
And this is Agonomics, your weekly podcast where economics meets agriculture.
We're joined by two more of our brilliant AHDB colleagues. And following last week's Beef Outlook episode, it's pork on the menu today.
Yes, this week we'll be looking at the pork outlook with senior analyst Freya Shuttleworth.
Then Retail and Consumer Insight Manager Vanessa Adamson will help us out on the demand side of things.
Tom, have you been continuing your research after all that steak last week?
Yeah, and how much pork have you been eating?
Well, it's only fair that I give pork the same attention as beef, so hopefully the weather will hold out and we'll be throwing a few ribs on the barbecue.
Cool, that sounds good to me.
Mmm, delicious. Of course, we'll also be looking at a few news stories that have caught our eye and answering this week's big question.
So remember, new episodes drop at midday every Wednesday. So follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to make sure you don't miss a show.
And please do get in touch. Email us at agonomics@hdb.org.uk.
Hello, we're back again for another week. Starting off with what's in the news. Tom, what have you been reading?
So on the topic of pork, as we've already mentioned, I have been looking at the long-term consumption outlook for pork. So that goes all the way to 2033. And there really is some interesting stuff in there. The sort of top-end annual growth rate for some areas of the world, particularly looking at Southeast Asia, is going to increase 3.6% per year, which I think is staggering. 131 million tons is projected to be consumed in 2033, with a minus 2% forecast drop in global per capita pork intake. So it will be quite a varied picture when you're looking at where consumption is coming in the world, particularly those sort of developing areas that are going to be increasing that percentage. From a sort of global food consumption growth coming from India and Southeast Asia, they're going to be sort of making up a 30% share by that year. And then a decline in pork share of protein in high income countries. We've particularly seen that with about a drop of 5%. So if you want to check out that article, please do visit the AHDB website. That's ahdb.org.uk. Speaking of India, I think, Hannah, you've got some interesting news from that side of the world.
Yeah, so one of our senior analysts, Jess, has put out a piece recently on the UK-India Free Trade Agreement, which was signed on the 24th of July, so a few weeks ago now. The deal aims to boost trade between the UK and India, which has previously been quite limited. the Indian market is quite restricted. There's been quite high tariffs on that market and access barriers, which this deal is aiming to liberalise. So the deal aims to cut tariffs on 90% of tariff lines and kind of make that trade a bit more frictionless. India is quite an exciting market, I would say. Generally, it's got really high growth rates predicted. It's the fifth largest economy in the world, and it's got the highest growth rate in the G20. So it's quite a dynamic market, and that presents opportunities for UK businesses. In terms of agri-food, I think the main wins are looking to be on things like alcohol, biscuits, salmon, and lamb as well is another key area of opportunity for us. But it's a little bit of a mixed bag in terms of other agri-food. So beef is excluded because the Indian market is really strictly controlled on imports of beef due to religious and cultural reasons. And pork and dairy have been excluded as well from tariff concessions. And I think there's a bit of concern in the dairy industry at the moment as to how that trade has been liberalised. So Indian access into the UK has been liberalised, but the access from the UK into India hasn't really been changed. So there are still some risks, I would say, to that kind of dairy trade with high tariffs. But if you want to read more about that analysis, Jess has put an article online and we can link that into the show notes. Charlotte, what about you?
Well, I'm going to throw a question straight back to everyone. What's your Greggs of choice?
I'm quite partial to a cheese and bean melt. Are they still a thing?
Oh, I don't know. I've heard of that.
Although you do have to watch because the beans are normally like molten lava.
I'm a steak bake man through and through, with a sausage roll on the side, of course.
Producer Alice, what about you?
Okay, well, confession time then, I guess. I don't think I have ever been inside a Greggs.
Oh, sorry. My goodness.
You've never experienced getting the flakes of sausage roll all over your car.
Well, at least not Greg's one. We do have one where I live. It always seems quite popular, but I don't think I've ever actually visited.
We could do a group outing if you like.
Yeah, team road
trip. I'm a sweet person, very much a pink jammy, love a pink jammy donut. But the reason I'm asking about Greg's is because I've recently seen on socials that Greggs are actually planning on targeting a slightly different demographic of consumers, with a lot of news and noise in the media around weight loss drugs, GLP-1s, which I'm sure most people have seen. Greggs are actually seeing this as an area which they can target. So looking at bringing out a new selection of foods that have smaller portions and higher protein alternatives. We've also seen that it's been said by Health Secretary Wes Streeting that if overweight Brits cut 200 calories out of their diet per day, then they could halve obesity. So that would be the equivalent of just dropping one bottle of fizzy drink out of your diet. So very interesting that Greggs are jumping onto this health bandwagon when, quite honestly, they wouldn't be a retailer I'd think about health with.
So hopefully that means that the calorie intake of my flaky sausage roll in the car might be slightly lower, which is always good news. Thank you for that, Charlotte. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back to hear about the pork outlook.
Welcome back, everyone. Now it's time to delve into the world of pork and forecasting. So get your crystal balls out. We're about to look into the future. We are joined by our senior analyst for the pork sector, Freya Shuttleworth.
So, Freya, what was your crystal ball saying? You've just released your outlook for pork last week. What were you thinking was going to be happening?
It's still a very positive picture overall for UK production. For 2025, we're looking at pig meat production totaling 988,000 tonnes, which would be an increase of 2.8%. on 2024. This will predominantly be driven by an increase in clean pig numbers, which are expected to rise 2.3%, but also carcass weights. They've been increasing for the last 12 months or so, and they're looking to average about 90.5 kilograms.
Interestingly, Freya, I know a couple of years ago when I first joined, there was a little bit of a backlog and there were some issues, and then it meant that there were a lot higher carcass weights coming through. How are they comparing to a couple of years ago then, if you're saying that they are back on the increase?
So 2021, 2022, the industry was in a bit of crisis. Brexit didn't help that. Shortages of labour and obviously COVID as well, impacting staff with social distancing and illness. That meant that both processors and abattoirs were struggling with getting pigs moved. That resulted in pigs being on farm for longer, which inevitably meant that they got heavier weights. So we were looking at about, at the peak, 92 kilograms on carcass weights. They have since come down. So in 2023, we returned more to historic norms. So they were about just short of 90 kilos. In 2024, they then increased up to 90 kilos on average. And then the back end of 24 and the beginning of 25, we actually saw carcass weights creep back up to 91 kilos, but they have eased off in quarter two, mainly driven by the hot weather that we've had in the UK. Pigs do suffer a little bit from heat stress, so the prolonged hot weather that we've had has just meant that those finishing pigs haven't quite been getting up to the same rate weights that they were earlier in the year, but they're still historically high. There are long-term improvements in weight gain. So as we improve the genetics of our pigs, as producers look to maximise their contracts, we are generally seeing that the UK pig industry is increasing its carcass weights over time. And actually, that's not just limited to the UK. That is a global movement as well. When we look at long-term production forecasts, all of the key producing nations across the EU and North America and South America are pushing to make those productivity gains.
Yeah, I mean, the pig crisis was a hugely tumultuous time for the sector, wasn't it, Freya? We've seen quite a bit of stability, I'd say quite welcome stability, in the pork market over the last 18 months, year or so. And of course, we were both at the Pigs Tomorrow conference recently. What were you picking up around sort of sentiment, and how does that really translate into the outlook?
Yes, I would say that industry sentiment is rather positive and has been, as we say, probably for the last 18 months or so. There are some uncertainties around some government policy. So thinking of the autumn budget and the spring budget reviews. But on the whole, prices have held very stable. They're not as high as they were in 2023, but 2025 is currently holding very close to 2024. And we suspect that that will continue for the rest of the year. The EU price differential has narrowed, so we've not got so much pressure between those. So that's seeing our import balance back a little bit, which is welcome news for UK producers. But then also the net margins are holding up as well. We've seen some key costs have eased, such as feed. So feed, wheat and general ingredients and protein prices have eased over the last kind of 6 to 12 months. Yes, there has been some challenges. So we know that bedding materials with straw shortages, etc., have gone up, and the cost of labour has also increased. But when we average these out across our cost of production model, actually, it's not looking too bad. We've had our new quarter two data released, and that's actually seen our quarter two net margins higher than they were in quarter one. So it's definitely still a positive picture, which does encourage some investment long term.
I was going to say, do you think that sort of environment is driving a bit of investment now?
Yeah, there's definitely been, we've definitely heard of investment. We know that the December England census survey showed that breeding pigs were up 3% in terms of numbers. So for the forecast, we have carried that through to June for the full UK picture. We do think that the number of the pigs in the UK will be higher this year than it has been. And that would have been caused by investment on farm, which would have been incentivised by these margins.
One of our favourite topics on Agonomics, Freya, is, of course, trade. So what does the global picture look like?
Yeah, so on trade, it's been a positive year for, so far anyway, for the UK. We've seen exports up around 5% year on year, and we're actually forecasting that to continue for the rest of the year. Most of that volume gain has been driven by China. They've been benefiting both on the muscle meat and on the offal front year on year. Some of that benefit, we think, is caused by the fallout between the US and the China. So with Trump's trade tariffs.
Try saying that three times.
I know.
There's a tongue twister.
However, there are also some further opportunities. In the latest week, we've heard from government that 12 businesses across England and Northern Ireland have secured access to Mexico for both pork and offal products. So that is very welcome news as well.
So on that relatively positive note, I think, from Freya's point of view, let's now move to what the consumer's thinking and feeling. Vanessa, what's the story for pork?
Well, following the podcast last week on the beef prices, it's a good story for pork. We've revised our forecast from January and using obviously the retail sales, food service sales and our consumer tracking studies, we're pleased to say that we've revised our forecast where we'd said we forecast it to be down 1% in 2025. We now believe that's going to actually increase by 1% this year.
That's excellent news. It's nice to have a positive consumer demand story after we've had a couple of not so favourable outlooks, perhaps, for beef and lamb. So great news on that point. What do you think are some of the key reasons behind this?
I think one of the key reasons is the rising beef prices. Pork is the most affordable red meat. So consumers, you know, we're still in times of economic uncertainty, high inflation, and consumers are very much still watching what they spend on just, you know, everyday essentials like food. And meat, as we know, is one of the most expensive items in the regular food shop. So this actually, you know, if they still want to purchase meat, which obviously a lot of consumers still do, this is where pork is actually gaining. It has definitely picked up some volume from these rising beef prices.
What are we seeing, Vanessa? Because obviously chicken is a really big competitor for pig meat and pork, isn't it, at retail for consumers? Yeah. Is pork losing any volume to chicken as a result of what we're seeing with price inflation?
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, chicken is seen as a more versatile dish. So, yeah, pork naturally loses some to chicken. And I think this is where at AHDB, we do a lot of work behind the scenes to try and promote, you know, the health benefits of pork and try and encourage consumers to trade into pork. You can create budget-friendly dishes and recipes with pork. So there's a great variety there, but it's getting that message across.
Are there any specific wins that the pork counter has had in terms of cuts?
Yes, very much marinated dishes, you know, that premium end of a market where, you know, people, you know, want to treat themselves. So it's a nice thing to do to treat themselves to a more premium end of a market. So marinades are doing well. Also, on the other end of the scale, mince is obviously a more affordable cut and it's very versatile. So, you know, consumers can easily make bolognese, can make Mexican dishes, chilies, you know, also burgers, meatballs. And that's a good, you know, win for the family that pork's very versatile at doing that. And then we've also seen, you know, we're in summer at the moment, you know, ribs are doing really well. I know you touched on that, Tom, good favourite of yours. And also, you know, the ever popular sausages. You know, sausages are good family favourite, and also a favourite on the barbecue. So they're all doing really well this year.
So you've just touched on that some of the cuts that are doing well are those that perhaps can be for recreating those out-of-home moments, but in-home as that cost saving. How is pork doing in the out-of-home market? Are people still going out and purchasing pork for their dishes when they are eating out?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, pork is a popular item. Like we've touched on greatly for Greg's here. It's a good treat and it's more affordable. You know, if you want to go out, you can go and treat yourself. Maybe while you're working, go and treat yourself to a quick lunch. It's not going to break the bank. So, you know, your sausage rolls, your pasties, maybe a bacon sandwich, a sausage baguette, for example, you know, they're good examples. These are all doing well and all still very popular.
So overall, I mean, it sounds like quite a positive picture for pig meat demand. But I guess there's always room for improvement with these sort of things, isn't there? So what are you kind of seeing from a supply chain and a retailer perspective that could be done to kind of boost that pork demand and keep it in people's baskets?
I think we really need to keep it top of mind. Pork is kind of maybe like a forgotten meat. So we need to really keep up the good health perceptions. Good for protein. It's good for vitamins and vitamins B12. And at AHDB, we have a marketing campaign, Love Pork, which shows lots of healthy recipes that are quick, easy and good family-friendly dishes and very tasty. We've carried out some healthy basket research, which proves that actually people that purchase red meat are more likely to be purchasing vegetables at the same time. So, you know, primary red meat is good for you in moderation, and you are likely to have it with vegetables.
So reminding consumers that pork is more than just thinking about sausages or bacon. It's about all the different things you can do with it, that it's good for you and that it's really tasty and enjoyable, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So thank you Vanessa and to Freya. Some really insightful stuff there. I can comment that I have recently delved into the Mexican side of pork's ability, and we've made some pork mince tacos that went down a treat with my housemate. Please do check out the full article and full outlook on the website ahdb.org.uk. I know we've scratched the surface and wet our whistle with it today, but there's some really juicy content on there too. So before we move on to our big question of the week, it's time to take a quick break.
Welcome back to the Agonomics podcast with me, Charlotte, Hannah and Tom. Remember, new episodes drop on a Wednesday, so make sure you're subscribed so you get the notification when they land. We've come to the part of the episode now where we get asked the big question that everyone wants to know. Producer Alice, what's it this week?
How much does the public trust farmers, and does that impact their food choices?
I think it's excellent that we actually had Vanessa on this episode of the pod. I'm going to go grab her real quick so she can help us answer this. One sec.
Hi, thanks, Charlotte.
You thought you were getting off it easy with just talking about pork outlook, but yeah.
This is a little surprise.
Question for this week is all around British Farmers and Trust. And actually, we thought this would be a great one for you to come and help us answer, because within the Retail and Consumer Insights team that we're in, this is actually something that we look at, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We do a trust study every year, and we've tracked this for the last 5 years. And I'm very, very pleased to say that consumer trust in farming is very high. It's risen over the last 4 years. And now 67% of consumers in our study tell us they have a positive impression of UK farming. And when we ask them, actually, how much do they trust them versus other professions, actually, this has been increasing year on year. 76% of respondents said they trusted British farmers. And this is only second behind doctors at 78%. And this was the highest versus all other elements of the food chain.
So I think the answer is yes, then. The public does trust farmers.
A resounding yes, I would say.
I remember reading this article when it came out. Quite interested to see who was at the bottom end of the scale.
Well, Tom, that is interesting because I was told not to mention them.
So people have to go and read the article to find out for themselves. But yes. We'll gloss over that one quickly.
So when we talk about farmer trust, or the trust that the consumer has for farmers, how does that potentially convert into sales at the supermarket, at the retail end of things, or potentially the food service?
I think it's an interesting picture, isn't it, Vanessa? Because we've got here that British farmers are obviously very trusted. What they're producing is going to be very trusted. But we're also, and I'm going to stay kind of still, in a cost of living crisis. We had all thought we were coming out of it at the tail end of last year, hadn't we? But actually, it does seem to be rearing its head somewhat again with consumer confidence and their ability and their spending ability, really. And that is certainly having an impact on what they're buying, isn't it?
Yes, supporting British farmers is very important to consumers. But at the end of the day, it is down to cost. It's very aspirational to support British farmers. But at the end of the day, consumers have to feed their families. They've only got so much money to spend. It comes down to providing meat within that meal at a cost they can afford.
So while they would want to be buying British, actually, in some instances, it is going to be coming down to what they can afford to be putting in their baskets rather than actively seeking out that British origin, perhaps.
Yes. I mean, if it was a case of products being the same price, sentiment would say that they would go for the British product.
So when it comes to trust in farmers, and that being an important thing for the industry, something that's difficult to build, but once you've got there, sort of it's hard to break. What is it that consumers are seeing in farmers that actually aids that trust and has caused it to grow in our study over the past 5 years?
Our research shows us that farmers come out above other food groups in the supply chain. They believe they're experts in what they do, that they care about their animals, and that they deliver on the promises, and also that they care about the planet. So these are all positive, you know, in terms of sustainability, in terms of animal welfare. And I think it's something we should be proud of in this country that our standards are so high. And that comes out in the research. One area where they were slightly lower on the scale was in terms of communication with consumers. So this is certainly something AHDB we're working with in terms of open farms, working with our education team to get children onto farms. So it's all about, you know, spreading that word. Farming is a big industry. It's really important to us in the UK. And it's about getting that message across.
So not expecting farmers to go and stand on a supermarket aisle and shout about exactly how they're brilliant their products are, but actually having that support and that interest. So yeah, Farming 24 that we just had on, having the webcams, is things like Clarkson's Farms actually really important too? Anything that's getting awareness for that consumer about the brilliant work that British farmers do?
Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for today in this episode, so that just leaves me to wrap up. We've delved into the world of pork. Thank you very much to our guests, Vanessa and Freya, for taking us through that. As Tom said, we've hopefully wet your whistle for that analysis, and there's plenty more of that online, so you can go and read the full report, and we'll include links to all the details in the show notes for you to go and have a look at. As always, it just leaves me to say, if you've got a question or a topic you've always wanted us to cover on the pod, please do get in touch with us, drop us a message or email us at agonomics@hdb.org.uk. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Charlotte. A pleasure as always. I'm off to Greg's.
See you there. Come on, Alice, we'll go into Greg's.
Excellent.